Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's good, internet? Welcome back to Waypoint's end of year video game celebration. As I've said before, for the next couple of weeks, we are going to be diving into some of our favorite games across something like 10 different podcast episodes. I've already broken down how it's going to work, so I'm not going to go over all of that again, but I will say that it will be a mix of deep dives, sort of mini Waypoint 101s about some of our favorite games of 2018, and also little one-on-one interviews between members of the Waypoint staff as we dig deeper into our own personal lists to make sure that none of those small games get missed in the celebration and conversation. Today, we are going to talk about what might be my favorite game of the year. So my list is still up in the air as the time that we're recording it, but it's going to be number one or number two is really what it's going to come down to. And I think it's going to be number one. I made a realization today, which is I think all top three of my top three games are mech games. So just being my entire self right now.
Oh, wait. These lists are ordered?
They can be. You don't have to be. We're okay. Welcome to Waypoint. You know, put a Waypoint on the map, go on a journey. You know, in necessity, there will sort of always be a formal order because whatever one you put last will be either last or understood to be first, right? So primacy and recency, baby. There's no escaping it. We live in linear time, whether we want to or not. We experience things as they happen. That was the voice of Ricardo Contreras. Cotto, thank you for joining us to talk about BattleTech. Also here, the big bear himself. I don't know what your call sign is, Rob. What is your call sign?
Oh, it's my handle I use for everything, which is Flitcraft.
Right, sure. Flitcraft but it doesn't have the energy that I think.
Like my battle tech, my Mech Warrior call sign. What is it?
Yeah.
I mean, Kodiak wouldn't be a bad one.
Are we all various bears? Is the question? Because like, you know, I have to be Papa Bear at this point, right?
Yeah,
I wish absolutely. I could just hack the game so that instead of saying commander, all of my units said Papa Bear. That would be incredible. Someone make that mod, please. So let's talk about BattleTech. Let's stop beating around the bush because I think we were all very excited by this game earlier this year. And I kind of want to start with a little bit of lead up. I think my feelings about mechs in general are pretty well known. People know that I'm a fan and that ranging from kind of Western stompy mechs in the BattleTech and Mech Warrior universe to kind of faster flying mechs in the Gundam and Japanese mecha genre. Well described already. Everyone knows that about me. But I'm curious for Cotto and Rob, where were you on mechs and where were you on BattleTech, both as a franchise of novels and a cartoon show and a tabletop war game, and as a video game series before this game came out? Let's start with you, Rob.
I mean, I am a longstanding BattleTech fan, and that goes back to when I played MechWarrior 2. The sort of shooter from Activision, sort of sim flavored shooter, and I was reading the mission briefings because remember they have these huge lore dumps in the mission briefings. This was my first exposure to BattleTech, and I realized none of this made any sense. Clan Jade Falcon, Clan Wolf Wardens, Crusaders, a Trial of Refusal. What the fuck is a Trial of Refusal? Like, are we fighting a war or is this ritual combat? Uh-huh. Turns out it's both. Uh-huh. And my solution, and this sort of sets the template for me just as a human being, is rather than... Well, there are no wikis you can go to back in this era.
Sure,
so my solution is... Blood of Kerensky trilogy by Michael Stackpole. I should read this. Mm-hmm. In fact, I should read this and then read all the BattleTech novels. So went all the way down that rabbit hole, got into the tabletop game, which immediately supplanted the MechWarrior games for me for a while, because it just felt so much more like the action in the novels, so much more, less of a gimmicky shooter where, like, you play the shooter, blow off their legs, get the biggest, meanest gun you can, and just, like, take legs
off
right and left.
Do that damage, yeah.
Yeah, but the board game is just this grinding attrition, death from above. You really feel the weight of the battle mech. And so I got all the way into that for a good many years until the franchise as a whole began to, I would say, wane a little bit. FASA began to hit harder and harder times. The overarching plots of that universe ended up kind of on a cul-de-sac.
Right.
And they ended up kind of shit-canning a lot of it to make room for the HeroClix series, I want to say, the MechWarrior Dark Age stuff, which I heard was very good, but it also basically blew away all the arcs they'd spent the last, like, 10 years establishing. So I kind of went away. I left Battletech and I parted ways. But this kind of got my attention from the first, because it was back to the classic era when, arguably, Battletech had its best balance. Getting back to those early, like, pre-clan invasion mechs.
Right, yeah.
And it is, and this was the important part, I love the Battletech tabletop game, but the last time I played it, I realized, holy shit, have times changed, and kind of left this behind. Mm-hmm. I want a game that feels like that. I don't want to play that anymore.
Right.
And I was kind of hoping this would check that box.
Kato, how about you? Coming into Battletech, what was your experience with the franchise and with mechs and tactics games?
So, as far as my childhood mechs, I was really into Power Rangers. So it was like Sentai, Super Robots sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, always thought those were cool as a kid. Specifically, MechWarrior actually hopped on during the Dark Age HeroClix thing. That was my first introduction to the series. I never really got into the lore, but I really enjoyed it. And, like, it was kind of my first... This was introduced to me at the first time I went to a D&D-based club at high school. Like, this was my first introduction to tabletop gaming in general. Was D&D, and then also this specific tabletop.
Oh, that's interesting. MechWarrior Dark Age, which was like the Clix system, which moved it into something a little more mainstream, or a little less like break out the ruler
Actually, it still had a ruler.
Oh, okay.
You were still measuring out the thing that it simplified was kind of the damage taken and given.
Right.
Right. That was where the click base came into, was like when you took damage, you would click it down, stats would change and such. So it, like, simplified that bit, but left in the, like, movement, like the firing arcs and all that.
I am so retroactively mad at my local comic and gaming store, because they did not, where I ended up working eventually, but, like, they had the Crimson Sky clicks, they had the Hero clicks, which are the ones that were super popular, which is Marvel and DC characters and independent comic book, like, characters. They even had, I want to say they even had Mage Knight, which was another big one at the time, and they maybe even had some of the Shadowrun stuff, but they did not have the MechWarrior stuff.
Oh, no.
I had completely forgotten that this existed, and I'm now retroactively really mad at myself and Jester's Playhouse from South Jersey for not putting me on these earlier.
But yeah, that was it was great. So, like, MechWarrior has always been at this introduction of me into tabletop gameplay, and I never, like, I would remember the, like, kind of, I don't even remember the names of the houses, but I remember the symbols and stuff.
Sure.
And, like, that kind of carried forward, but, like, That was kind of it. I never even touched any of the MechWarrior video games. Like, I feel like it was either, like, the wrong console that I didn't own. Like, I always, like, there was always, like, something in the way of me really getting into the games. But I remembered my time so fondly with the tabletop that I was really interested in kind of seeing how that translated into, you know, video game form. Mm-hmm. And I was also on a stint of playing XCOM and being kind of frustrated with the fact that, for me, the way I ended up playing that game, the only way that it ended up working for me was playing it while streaming with people who knew what was happening in the chat helping.
Sure.
Right? Like, and Battletech came through and was kind of the opposite. Like, I didn't need, like, it felt, like, simple to, like, understand, but deep once you want to really get into it in a way that XCOM felt, like, kind of, the obfuscation there is very different, you know?
It's really interesting. It's fun because I think when we talk about Battletech with the rest of the staff here, you know, it's funny to hear Patrick or even Danielle talk about it because, you know, Danielle obviously has put a billion hours into the Breach, which we will also be talking about this week. And Patrick is a big fan of XCOM and is currently in the middle of falling in love with Mutineer Zero, other tactics-based games. But there was something about watching Battletech that makes them think, oh, this thing is a more complex and a more a harder game to get into. And I think it's partially one of the big things is it sounds like all of us came into this game with certain knowledge of, if not even particular rule sets, you know, I think we all had some knowledge of the rule sets, but also just knowing certain conventions of how this sort of combat would work. The XCOM series did such a great job with Enemy Unknown at bringing in conventions from other recent games that communicated something well. You know, XCOM Enemy Unknown shows up right in the middle of the, or towards the end maybe even, of the cover shooters kind of apex in the games industry. And so you have lots of people who are like, oh, I get this. I put someone behind cover and there's a less of a chance of them getting hit. Battletech doesn't have that. And Rob, that was one of the big things that you pointed out in your review, right? It was like, this is a game about attrition. This is a game about huge walking tanks slamming into each other, and damage is a necessity. Taking damage is a necessity. In an XCOM, you want to get through a map without ever taking any hits, because taking hits often means like you're going to permanently lose someone. In Battletech, you can get beat to shit and it still costs you something, but what it costs you is money and time more than losing a character. Not that you can't lose a character, you absolutely can, and I absolutely have. Yeah. But there is this feeling of like,
it's rest in peace every Decker ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Pour one out for Decker. But there is this feeling in Battletech of it being less of a fencing match where every hit is a point and more of a prize fight where you end up where, like, hey, everybody's a little bruised. Everyone's a little battered at the end of this fucking thing. Rob, can you talk about that a little bit and maybe tell me, like, when was the moment that came through and what are some of the moments that really captured you while playing?
Gosh, I think that entire aspect of Battletech provides a bit of a remedy toward a, maybe not necessarily even a trend, but just a place that a lot of tactics games tend to end up, which is, I think they have a built-in bias toward perfectionism, toward the clean run, and discouraging you from sort of playing it as it lays. And which is weird, because I think there are, even if you're not consciously designing a game to push people in that direction, I think especially when you have sort of a meta campaign where units are gaining experience and power and capacity, it really makes it difficult for people to eat a loss.
Yeah.
And for that loss to feel satisfying. Like, that becomes a...
Yeah, like, think about something like the Fire Emblem series, right? Which is, I love that series, and also, I will restart a map the second I lose a character. I will restart a map the second it feels like I'm going down a path that might lose me a character. It's like playing chess if you wanted to throw out each game that you lost a pawn in. And that's ridiculous, right? In some real way. I mean, it isn't ridiculous because all of my Fire Emblem children are mine and I love them and want to protect them. But Battletech gets away from it.
Well, and the other part of that is a lot of times that cuts against the spectacle we sometimes want to see from a tactics game, which is units shooting it out, just the high explosives flying in every direction. If the more perfectionist you get, the more likely you get into a very surgical, very deterministic model of combat. Whereas I think Battletech from the first, the hit percentages are so high that in general, like, everybody's going to get hit. You can make your mech more or less evasive, but chances are, like, somebody's going to get, if somebody shoots six guns at you, one or two of them is going to score a hit. And Battletech sort of hammers that home, but I think it really starts introducing this inevitability in the plot missions. I think the plot missions do a great job of sort of giving you the sense of the escalating stakes and the escalating difficulty of, like, the missions you're going to be confronting. I think a really, eye-opening one for me and kind of a gut-wrenching one is an early mission in the campaign where you have to go storm a dropship landing pad, basically. This is probably like your third or fourth mission. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, I want to say it's Panzer. Yeah. So you're basically landing right. in a dropship landing zone so they can't bring in reinforcements so that your rebel forces can score a clean win. But you have to storm this pretty extensive dropship field. And it starts out with you coming down from the hills into an area already defended by heavy armor. It's the first time you're really dealing with the fact that like armored vehicles have severe limitations, but they can be real pests.
Yeah.
They can be enormously difficult to shoot to death, but traversing the ground to where you can just stomp them with your mech and get that double damage can also be a risky yeah. and painful endeavor. But that's only the first part of the mission. The next part of the mission, after you eat whatever damage you have to do, the next part of the mission is you have to then take on a full like enemy squad, and they're not. You know, they're not a joke.
Right.
Their mechs tend to be a little bit heavier probably than what you're bringing to the battlefield. And the one that the sequence that really got to me is there's this point where you're sort of storming a ramp. You have to get down into the main landing pad area and you have to funnel down this narrow ramp, and it makes a couple switchbacks and it's a natural choke. And one of the enemy mechs is a Hunchback, which is it's a middling mech, but the thing it notably has is an autocannon 20, the biggest like single shot, just like this thing is like firing massive rounds.
Like a howitzer at the scale of a shotgun, you know, like
yeah. So what really stuck out for me in this mission was there was a point where the Hunchback was closing in on one of the pilots in one of my heaviest mechs. And I jumped one of my most elusive mechs. I think it was, at this point, Glitch in a Vindicator. And just popped her in there at medium range just to, like, kind of distract. The Hunchback was... the Hunchback, I think we'd blown out the gun, but it was just starting to melee.
Yeah.
And we were just trying to bring this thing down. It was a wounded animal. And it was just pummeling. So I put the Vindicator between Behemoth and the Hunchback. And the Vindicator is basically like, it was basically pristine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Hunchback just like, and you hear,
I'm like when having a pilot nightmare.
Gets killed.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's a really shocking moment because you hear these characters talk on the radio all the time.
Constantly.
When the cockpit gets hit, you have a brief moment where they realize that they're about to die. They scream and the mic cuts.
Yeah.
Usually in a really upsetting, like, electronic and crunching metallic
yeah.
sound, and then they're gone.
All it takes
and
is
that's
one
exactly
hit. All it takes what, is one yeah. hit. This is you're hitting something God. In this whole story that about something that BattleTech hits so right that I hadn't been able to put into words until now. I have spent this year watching a lot of chess videos on YouTube. There's a specific chess guy who will be in, I'll note this in an essay I'm writing right now, so you can look up who I'm talking about then. But the one of the things that I've come to understand differently about chess this year is thinking about chess as about being board control, more about piece taking. And one of the things that BattleTech – and you can have tactics games about both of those things, right? Generally speaking, I think XCOM is a game about piece taking. XCOM is a game – certainly you have to care about where your troops are positioned, where your squad – you know, you have six people. Make sure that they're spread out in decent directions and they're all safe and in cover and that they're not grouped together and all that. Like, I'm not saying there's none of that. But you're kind of thinking about, like, okay, I have to take aliens off the board constantly in XCOM to keep the flow of incoming damage down. My best defense is a good offense there.
Yeah.
One of the things about BattleTech that's so strong is that it can operate at different scales using the same types of unit. So in the story you just told, there's a moment when you're kind of having this conversation about fronts, about, okay, do you want to march over one of your one whole unit to go deal with a couple of fucking tanks, to go step on some armor, some like medium armor units on the ground who are pestering you, but are not they're not other battle mechs, right? So it's not kind against kind in a sense. And so every time you do that in this game, it's a necessary thing to do, but it feels like this big grand strategy or even just a war game moment of moving a whole battalion, right? The battle mechs can be like battalions unto themselves. You can say, all right, I have this good mid-tier all-arounder who maybe has some small missile or some short-range or SRMs and LRMs, short and long-range missiles, and maybe has like some medium lasers, and they can hold down the fort over to the west, right? And so you have that moment, but then you also get this other thing that is duels, is my mech versus your mech, and it's one-on-one, and so the same game can give you the feeling of being a battalion commander or a duelist, and that is a really hard thing to do, and it gets to what some of the fantasy around mechs is at its core. Go ahead, Rob.
Can I just get to what you're describing, that feeling of the battle mech in itself becomes like a unit that is like larger than a single combatant, yes. Right? It feels like you can commit them to a front, to a sector. This is a feeling that I think was lacking a little bit in the launch edition of the game, because some things behaved a little bit wonky in the launch edition of the game. They worked in the scripted missions, but how many times would you start a mission and all the enemy reinforcements would be there from the beginning?
From the jump.
Yeah. They weren't enemy reinforcements. They'd be there right at the start. Yeah. So you just had to accept that sometimes, oh, I'm fighting 6 enemy mechs out of the gate or 8 out of the gate instead of dealing with 2 discrete groups. Since the game came out, they have fixed a lot of that stuff. So reinforcements are popping up at more appropriate intervals from when the battle is initially joined. But the other thing is just, I feel like with a combination of how maps are cycling, how reinforcements are being fed onto the battlefield, what I'm encountering a lot now that I didn't really encounter in the launch edition of the game, which I already loved, but I'm having a lot more of those engagements where, like, in front of me, I've got my main objective and the initial forces I was engaging. And then suddenly, like, long-range fire starts coming in from behind. Yeah. And you know, like, none of the mechs that are on your scanners fired. So reinforcements are here. They are already taking shots from beyond visual range using the targeting data of the guys who are already fighting. So now you have this problem of, do I try to rush forward and take out this remaining group, or do I peel off a couple units and begin skirmishing with the reinforcements and try to prevent them from coming right in on my backside and sort of crunching me?
Yeah.
And that becomes a really interesting, it does feel like at that point it is a battle that is larger than the XCOM scale where everyone is immediately like trying to provide flanking support for another unit that's immediately there. Sometimes in Battletech, you will end up, even though you're only controlling like 4 characters, you will end up in a situation where it feels like you have your main fight and now an entirely separate tactics game, an entirely separate board has opened up behind you. And which side of this do you play the 2 units? You know, which side of this do you prioritize? How do you eventually cause these 2 battles to merge in a way that doesn't involve you getting overmatched, but instead leaves you in control of the overall engagement? That's really rewarding. Yeah. And it's something this game has done a great job of providing as it has developed since release.
Totally. Kato, is there a moment? Go ahead.
Oh, what I was going to say to that is, like, I feel like a lot of that has a lot to do with the way the mechs are so directional, right? Because there is a front side and a back side. There's different armors on those sides as well. They, like, you have to You can do this weird like side engagement where you get someone right on the edge of a firing arc, and as you plan to turn around or like not expose yourself as much as well, like there's all this like directional stuff that really helps that feeling of like different fronts, because you're only, you know, you can only fire so far in a certain arc, and also just the fact that they included in the UI the kind of striations in your firing arc, so you can see what different weapons kind of work at different like distances easily. Mm-hmm. really helps kind of like put forward this like, it's like the placement is obviously, this happens in other tactics games, but like less this idea of like cover being the only way that you place things. Like the placement is contingent on like what weapon and armor like each individual unit has more specifically than those than like an XCOM.
Totally. And all that stuff I think adds up to a greater deal, an even greater deal of identification with the unit as unit. Like Rob, yeah. we've been streaming XCOM together for a year now. You know, on average, let's say once every 3 weeks. That average was higher at the middle of the year. We have a lot of attachment to those characters, but a lot of that is because we've invested in them. We've given them funny names. We've made sure their looks are really distinct and that there's a lot that sets them apart from each other. And the bond system that's in the game now helps with that. But one of the things that's just in the game from the jump in Battletech are just an increase in identification because of the way that, like you just said, Kato, where you put things on certain arms and certain places. Losing a really good shotgun really right. hurts, or a really good AC-20, or losing a rare gun that you got from a story mission. Or I lost a heat sink recently, like a double heat sink, which is like an ancient piece of technology that does a great job of keeping a mech cool. And it sucked. Like, I didn't lose a gun. I didn't lose a pilot. I lost a heat sink, and it made me, like, grimace. But the beauty of the game is I pushed through it and finished the mission, because finishing the mission still felt like a success, despite that loss. And that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, and again, I think it speaks to that aspect of other tactics games. It's very feast or famine.
Yeah.
A unit might get wounded, and you're playing a bit of a push-your-luck game, but fundamentally, a character on one hit point can do all the things that a character mm-hmm. on 12 hit points can do, whatever. In Battletech, you have this death by a thousand cuts. You have steady degradation of equipment and material. And that provides this other really cool feeling to these engagements of, when you see another enemy unit, like, you know, a trebuchet, for instance, which is just this long-range missile-firing pest of a mech that I love to have on my side and I hate dealing with on the other enemy side. But when you have somebody score in a lucky shot early on that knocks out one of those LRMs, you immediately feel this, ha, that thing just, like, collapsed in value. Yeah. Like, now it is literally half as dangerous as it was. And I can now shift targeting priority uh-huh. if I want to, right? Like, now that unit is diminished. I can weigh it differently in my calculations. Yeah. The same thing is happening as you're playing. And so you have this wonderful sense of, you know, a unit that predominantly relies on long-range weapons suddenly has them shot off.
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
Or something closes distance on you and suddenly
right.
you're like, well, fuck. Like, they're within my firing arc. My LRMs are not effective here, or they'll miss here. They won't hit at all, or you know, they'll just get in on me close too quickly if I just stay here. Do I retreat? Do I take the lucky shot and maybe try to death from above them and jump up and land on them? And all that stuff is great.
And there's so many permutations of it. Right. Like, what do you do? This is the other wonderful thing about this push your luck aspect to Battletech is, what do you do when a unit is basically still fine? You get like a heavy mech. Uh-huh. It's like basically all its systems are still working. It's in great shape, except the head armor is really wounded.
Yep.
Like, it took a shot there, and like the next shot
is dead.
Is coming through the
yeah.
cockpit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of enemy mechs out there with missiles, and like, and you fire enough shit at a mech, something's gonna hit.
And it's yeah. Decker. But it's your friend Decker. You've kept Decker alive yeah. this whole time.
And so you're sitting there, and like, this mech could either last like 10 more turns of heavy combat, or it could be killed with a feather blow
yeah.
in the mm-hmm. right place. And I don't know which of those two things, like, how do I calculate this? How all in am I on this fight? And that's more of a concern in the contract missions, especially with the new update, flashpoints,
yeah.
When you're not playing just for plot stuff. When you are now playing for making ends meet at the end of the month and paying for mech refurbishment, uh-huh. You know, resupplies, mech warrior contracts, suddenly that mech that like is fine, it's still a great unit, but is also kind of hanging by a thread.
Yeah.
Suddenly that calculation changes a lot and becomes really interesting. Do I just want to pull this thing out? Is this thing just done and we're going to scrub it?
Have you ejected much? Have either of you ejected in the game? Because there's a moment, because you can eject your pilots whenever you want. And
hard thing to do.
And it's hard. Yeah. So for people who maybe haven't played this game that much or who haven't seen it at all, on top of having your mech that can take damage, your pilots also all can take damage. They take damage when when the cockpit gets hit directly. If the mech gets knocked down, which is a major part of this game, knocking down a mech so that you can then kind of do a called shot on one, or when one of the like side torso units takes damage or explodes. Not just takes damage, but when it explodes or when there's like an internal explosion from a critical hit, the pilot takes damage because they're getting knocked around inside of this like tin can cockpit. And by default, you start with 3 HP, and that can go up if you level them up a certain way. But you get down to that like 1 HP left, and there have been a couple of times where I have pulled the eject handle and been like, you know what? I witness is a top tier tactician who is in like a super heavy, is like assault class missile boat for me. I cannot lose him. If he dies, my entire strategy falls apart. And so I'm going to pull the plug. He's going to get out. And maybe I even lose them. Like maybe I lose the mission, and that's okay. Like I'll take that drop of wasted money and time, you know, but I'd rather get him out of there safely than risk getting him killed. Have either of you ever done the ejection? Damn.
No,
so it's two real fucking hard-nosed.
I've done it. The thing is, I basically do it when, like, death is imminent.
Right,
and I'm very much of that mold of, like, and this is probably not unlike me as a person. I'm like, I can pull this back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this can work. I will be careful.
I'll find
it. I think there is a way, like, I'll just keep this person back. I'll keep them getting exposed. I think we'll make this work. And by the time my calculations shift over to the pilot needs to get the fuck out, it is too late.
Yeah. Yep.
It was
yep.
the
yep.
last turn was, because the other thing is the AI is ruthless about targeting priority.
Mm-hmm.
If there is blood in the water, the AI, barring some other heavy, like variables that will heavily weight their calculations in the other direction.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if there's the least scent of blood in the water, the AI will target down the weakened unit until it is dead.
Yeah.
And so you might be looking there and like you're sitting there, you got a unit that is a little bit weakened more than the others, and it's in a decent position to be targeted, but it's still fundamentally okay. You have to be thinking it's going to be shot 4 times.
Yeah.
People are going to unload on this thing.
Yep.
Is it okay to the point getting shot at 4 full salvos, that pilot is going to survive. And I'm like, I feel lucky.
I rolled those
dice. Yeah. And I feel like that speaks a lot to the fact that, like, a mech isn't out. Like, the lifespan of a mech is so long, much longer than, like, a normal unit in most of these types of games, right? Like, even if it's missing a leg, as long as it still has all its guns,
yep.
like you can still do damage with that thing. Or even if it's missing a few of them, it can still be a distraction and like kind of like flanking to like, you know, cause a split in the other forces or whatever.
Yeah.
Like there's uses for mechs even when they're like on their last legs. And like that has me always being like, I can still find a use for this. And like I never eject, and then I fucking, you know, I lose. That's how I lost Decker.
Sure.
I lost Decker on the Argo mission. What was it again?
The Capture the Argo mission.
Capture the Argo mission.
You're going up against a pirate queen to steal this ancient ship, spaceship she has. That is, she's just using it as like a ground base, but you know can be converted into this like really powerful spaceship. And it's a brutal mission. That mission is rough. The real Battletech starts here, you know?
Yes, and like this was the end. Like she was on death's door. I needed one more shot.
No.
I had just knocked off one of her arms that had like her big gun. I forget what exactly it was, but Decker had just knocked it off the turn prior. Everyone else was like really messed up, but Decker I had kept far away enough that he was like basically fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I make the mistake of then standing in front of this. I swear, any one shot from any other mech would have taken this thing down. I stood Decker in front of this. It's like the heaviest class thing you've seen in
the
game up until this point.
You fought.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And take the shot. Don't move him at all. Like the big mistake first.
Yeah,
don't even move.
Yep. Especially at fucking launch. Especially at launch to not get those evasion ticks.
Big the evasion tick, like I. I don't know if I what happened or what I like. I blanked. I did not.
You thought you were going to get the
evasion ticks.
That's the thing that happened.
Yeah, I was like, it was, and like I was like, this thing is basically dead. It has one gun.
Yep.
That fucking headshot Stekka the next turn, like out.
And that's the,
and then like
oh, it's so good fucking, because like
yeah.
How often do I say the thing that brings me to games is the ways that we can tell stories with systems.
Yes.
That this game is filled with it, and it's, I want to be clear, there are also stories by stories, you know, through stories in this game.
Yeah, like yeah.
The, good stories.
That the arc of Kamiya and the restoration of the Erano legacy, like that story is fantastic. I think that it's like it gives you just enough wiggle room to be kind of rolling your eyes at the idea of restoring a noble house while still collecting a paycheck,
right.
Or being a diehard loyalist if that's the way you want to play. And it's beautifully rendered. I think the music is fantastic. I think the voice acting is incredible. I love my ship's crew, but the way that stuff mingles with the systemic stuff that ends up being the best, right? I recently got an event. I think they added a bunch of new events via Flashpoint. Rao, I don't know if that's a thing you know for sure, but I got an event that was like, some of my crew were like, hey boss, you got to see this video. And I was like, what's up? And here, I'm just going to read from it. Dr. Murad rewinds and restarts the video. The timestamp says 2:38 a.m. Seven wet, naked bodies come flying out of the new low-G pool installation and into the hall. Four women, three men, all laughing and bouncing off of each other. Well, this is way more nudity than I was prepared to see this morning, Sumire says. Yang laughs. Seriously, how am I supposed to work with those people now? At this point, Sumire begins cracking up. Too true, too true. And you get an option, erase the recording or address the crew. And the idea of like, oh, fuck, my, like, the crew that 2 minutes ago or 2 days ago in the game was exchanging shots with space pirates over a political prisoner and who came, like, you know, a moment away from death, one wrong missile salvo, or they did have to eject, or their mech's legs were taken out from under them, like, and they were laying on the ground and only a last second, you know, headshot from across the map for me saved them, like, that stuff makes those little fun event chains or random events while traveling through space that much more meaningful and helps like situate them and move them out of the category that's just like, oh yeah, these are just randomly pulled from a pool, to like, oh no, it's not just seven people. Like that's Witness, that's Rooster, yeah. that's Root. That's my crew right there, you know? And like, that is, it would be so easy for that game to have just spit these out and for these not to hit for me. But because the game gives you such a strong feeling of connection with the characters in the combat, these events ended up working with me 100%. By the way, I erased the tape. What my crew does in their off time, I don't, you know, they,
yeah,
let them have,
know,
fun.
Just chill, whatever.
They all got a high
He's
spirits
a
bonus or
scene,
whatever. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Morale was up, you know?
Yeah, I,
go ahead.
There's definitely more events than there were before. I also really enjoy the degree to which the flashpoints themselves, and I wrote a longer thing about this on the site, but Flashpoint is a weird expansion because it's not like you get a big chunk of expansion combat that's like front and center.
Yeah.
And here's the new shit. Like War of the Chosen from the jump is like, here are the Chosen, and they change the game. And there's an entire like campaign layer that you have to deal with around the Chosen. With the Flashpoint expansion, everything's much more like layered into the game as it already was. What it is really doing, it is giving you more stuff to do in that open-ended mercenary mech life sim that you've got in BattleTech. And the thing that I do appreciate about these flashpoints is they begin shading in a lot of the world of BattleTech that I think was probably opaque to a lot of people who don't have 20 years of background with this ridiculous archaic
yeah.
sci-fi universe,
yeah.
And begins to get into a little bit what is the geopolitical context in which not only like your character finds themselves, but the Erano Restoration that is the main actor of the main campaign, the main plot focus of the main campaign, where they actually stand in relation to this wider world. What does all that mean? The flashpoints kind of answer that, and they begin kind of gracefully giving you just enough of a taste of what each faction is going to be about as this franchise unfolds.
Yeah.
And I think they do it in a way that also lets you play some really fun handcrafted scenarios.
There's moments in that campaign that help. There's a sense of scale in this campaign that I just love, partially because it feels like you are truly on the periphery of bigger events, both in time and in location. So in time, you know, there are moments when we talked at length already about the Smithin mission, which is like a really difficult, tough mission for me at the time, because it was one that encouraged me as a player to try to get all of the victory conditions instead of just settling for a definite win. But a couple of missions after that, you end up picking up, doing a set of kind of hard missions, but then the reward for it are these like assault class mechs with incredible power, with weapons that you cannot find in the stores normally, that you're not just going to find from rival mechs. They're kind of, Battletech is sort of a game that at the start, you know, in let's say the Harebrained Schemes game specifically, is happening after kind of the fall of the Roman Empire in a sense, right? Things were great and now things are less great. We're kind of in the remnants of what was once this great civilization. And so we've lost a bunch of great technology, a lot of powerful technology, and you get some of it back, and then a mission or two later you go back to the planet of Smithin to liberate it, and I believe it's to liberate it, and you're just this like walking powerhouse. You were just this incredible, just like all four of your people are so much strong. There's a truck outside that really wants to participate. It's also an assault class truck. That feeling of like, oh wow, there was this great history behind us becomes like realized and material when you find the bunker filled with the remants of it. And then go ahead, Rob. You want to jump in on this?
No, I was going to say, you were asking like great moments. That moment stands out in this campaign so much.
Good.
It's a cool mission. Yeah. The ancient defense weapon reactivating. But I also could never get that image out of my head of Kamea standing in that darkened mech bay. They do a great job with like animated portraits, yeah. Basically. Like, yep. they'll bring up different layers at different points and sort of motion, like have a little motion in them. But the moment when the lights begin to come up and you see all these like pristine Star League Defense Force mechs mm-hmm. lined up, and you realize like,
oh shit,
there's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Yep.
And like, then the game lets you play with them.
Yeah, totally. Like, it immediately puts you outside and says, like, yeah, these are yours. Have fun. Like, you immediately get to march around in these incredible... It's like finding... It's like not just finding, like, a suit of armor. It's like finding, like... the Philosopher's Stone, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a mythological thing you have stumbled into. It's so good. And then the other half of that, though, is narratively, there are these moments where... I mean, this is one of them, right? Where... all of a sudden, you're kind of brushing up against a slightly bigger power. You know, this is a game about a civil war inside of a minor power in the periphery that has been allowed, in a sense, to exist because it's small enough not to get the attention of bigger players. And suddenly, a still small player, but one that's bigger than you, the Torian Concordat, is that right, Rob?
Yep.
Gets you get their attention. Because of two different things. One is because of something you do in combat against one of them, but also because political games are happening and they are being maneuvered to be opposed to you. And even though they are a minor power in the grand scheme of the Battletech universe, their entry into this war is such a pivotal moment that feels like, ah, fuck, like, I thought I had control of this thing. I was finally starting to feel like I outclassed all these other schmucks in this backwater district of space. But now if the fucking Concordat's going to get here, we are in trouble. Like, they are going to lock these places down with technology and just numbers that I cannot compete with. And that was a really cool feeling.
Yeah, that mission is great. You have those, like, what appear to you to be super mechs, and you think, this is just that mission. Every game has one of these. The mission where they give you a bunch of cool shit, and they just let you run riot over everybody else. Just, it's going to be a blast. And that mission gets, like, it ramps up so quickly as you realize that, okay, I have these, I found these, like, named blades, almost.
Yes, that's a great comparison. Here is Dorindel. I found it, yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, like, a proper national army just showed up.
Yeah.
And that's not the scale at which you've been operating. And so, yes, you have these amazing pieces of equipment that you're dealing with, but also you realize it is that feeling, sort of this eldritch horror moment in the game. I think it plays with this a couple times, this feeling there are greater powers out there that is easy to forget they exist because you get so caught up in the narrative of your campaign, your mercenary contracts, that you forget that you are a speck of dust
right.
in this universe.
Yep.
And suddenly one of the powers notices you.
Yeah.
And I go ahead, Connor. Personally, I like didn't even feel like a speck of dust at that moment, because specifically from the point of getting the Argo, like that is such a large ship that's like a big, that felt like such a big jump from like the very beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That like you feel like yeah, like you were saying, like you've got, you're like making some moves, you've got this under control for a bit, but then you the scale totally shifts when you realize there's much bigger things than you out there.
Yeah. Any other big standout moments for the game? You know, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, what I would love to hear is some standout moments. Good call. Rob in the chat was like, break? Which, I don't know that we took one during our last one of these, but we should be taking those. So yeah, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about any other standout moments, and maybe what we'd like to see from the franchise going forward. BRB.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we are back to talk a little bit more about BattleTech before we wrap up for the day. So yeah, let's see. Are there any other big moments that you want to call out here? Any other things either from Flashpoint, which has changed the game quite a bit, or from the original release?
I could talk about this game all day. Like, me too. I know so many stories.
Absolutely,
about it.
I know we both do.
I think one of the things this game does that maybe doesn't get called out enough because it's such a low-key success, mm-hmm. but it's such a hard thing to actually get right, which is having narrative stuff expressed through gameplay, mm-hmm. Through especially in a tactics game, where units are supposed to behave a little bit like chess pieces. Like, you want the AI to play optimally, you want them to make the smart move, all this stuff. There is a character in this game, Victoria Espinosa, who's yeah. kind of like the reverse of the coin of the virtuous Lady Kamea Arano, who you're serving. Like, if you're serving sort of the model of aristocrat that believes in, like, service, in noblesse oblige, mm-hmm. in, like, responsibility, in charity, in mercy, she has sort of the dark counterpart, which is somebody who believes in privilege, in rank, in power, in preference, all these things. And you encounter her memorably twice. And the first mission you encounter her in is a mission that also sort of has ramifications for that moment where the Taurian Concordat shows up,
yeah.
Even though you don't know it at the time. But in this mission, which is kind of a pretty normal, I think, like smash and grab type mission at that point, she shows up in the middle of it. And she shows up in a very good battle mech. I forget what she's piloting. I want to say, is it like a catapult?
It might be. It's been so long. It's going to make me want to look it up. But yeah, whichever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing is, she shows up, and you're on this, like, Martian hell, like, this Martian industrial colony type landscape. There's, like, red dust blowing everywhere. The sky is sulfurous. It feels like a mission taking place in, like, literal hell. And she shows up with...
It is a catapult. Like, it is a catapult.
Yeah.
Called Kaga. It has a name. Like all great mechs do.
Yeah. She shows up with a great lance of mechs, and she's in a beast of a mech compared to what you have. And immediately, like, you know, she's arrogant, she's just a huge asshole, and she's like, let's go, let's square up.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to fight. But the thing about her is, just as a matter of character, she's always got this tinge of, like, violent, like, uncontrolled violent rage in everything she does.
Yep.
And as you fight her, she just begins spamming full salvos, what are called alpha strikes in BattleTech parlance. She is firing every weapon she's got every turn. And the battle for me, this is the way this played out for me.
Yeah.
This thing was starting to get away from me, and my units are just trying to, like, just try not to get hit. Like, basically, we are running as much as possible, popping out from behind cover, taking a shot, just trying to evade. And she is losing it. She keeps firing everything she has until she cooks her mech.
Right.
Like, these things, they begin to, like, shimmer with, like, heat waves as they heat up. As they overheat, you begin to see, like, parts of the machinery start to glow hot. If you go all the way to max heat, which I don't recommend doing for a whole variety of reasons, but if you push it all the way to max heat, the mech glows white hot like molten steel. I've never actually done that to a mech, I don't think. Like, I just never hit that point.
Right.
Like I might overheat a little bit.
That's because you're not consumed with a molten steel white hot rage the way Victoria Espinosa is.
But
that's
the point. This mission, right. It felt like, yeah, what saved my ass in this mission is she just overcommitted to the point where she shut her mech down. When a mech shuts down like that, basically it loses two full turns. Mm-hmm. And it's just sitting there, sitting duck. It can't shoot. It can't evade. It is just a static target for people to practice on at that point. And so we are hard pressed. And suddenly she just unloads everything on one of my sort of jumpy evasive mechs that's up on a ledge. And that thing goes completely white. Shuts down. I think it might have even fallen over.
Things explode. It takes damage internally, right? So it could have knocked off a leg. Who even knows, right?
Yeah, so the thing is, so the entire battle flips. Like, suddenly she's off the board, and we just unload. Like, she's got the best mech. We just unload on it, destroy it, wipe her squad. It's great. But the entire thing hinges on the fact that she is out of control. And it's the first time you see, like, yes, they're on the winning side of this war right now. They stole power. But, man, is it on a rotten foundation. Uh-huh. And that all comes back at the end of the campaign, I think, in a beautiful way, which is you have to confront her again, but the circumstances are so different. It is a battle, to an extent, where nothing's at stake anymore.
Yeah.
Things are over, and you have to face her. And where she is at emotionally, narratively, becomes so fascinating, and she is a disgusting villain in this game.
Yeah.
But you have a measure of sympathy for where you realize how this person got so twisted.
Yep, 100%.
Why, like, it is that moment where you know somebody, you know they want to come back from this and they can't, and they know it on some level. They know they cannot undo
they've
what
crossed
they've
done. The Rubicon. They cannot cannot go back to a normal where she just goes back to being your bud and being like in daily life the way she was once.
And you can feel that.
Yeah.
In the tactics game. And that is the special achievement in this game that I think is very hard for any sort of tactics game. I think Bungie nailed this sort of shit with Myth all the way back in the day. But getting narrative feel to come across in tactical gameplay mechanics is a very, very hard thing to do. Mm. Battletech does it a couple times, and I'm always impressed when they do.
That's a great point, and I think it gets at a big part of why I like mechs so much and why I like stories about mechs. Right? These are big walking tanks. These are military hardware in the shape of humans. Often, not always, but often. And there is something very direct about that metaphor, right? Oh, here is the angry commander who literally ends up glowing red hot. It is like something out of a Saturday morning cartoon or an anime in which she loses her fight because she overcommits and goes, you know, so determined to take you off the map, overheats her mech. Like, there is something very simple about that. But there is also something that in the mech tactics genre and the tactics genre in general that I think shows the strength of the complexity here, right? There's a way to make a version of this game where it is just hyper complex. There are plenty of tactics games and war games and mech games that do not do anything with that extra degree of complexity that, you know, you're tracking, for instance, you're not tracking individual ammo rounds in this game, right? You have to buy ammo for your mechs, but like that ammo number is just kind of abstracted. You have an ammo unit that you put on your mech. It might cost money to refill. I'm not sure, but it doesn't matter, right? I'm not counting credits per bullet at this point. There are games that do that. There are games that really are interested in doing a pure simulation of, or as close to a pure simulation as possible. Here, it's a game that's interested in, like, what can we say about the characters involved? How do you, as a mech commander, want to operate your squad? And each of those little choices gives a great deal of character to everyone you play as, right? So I'm going to pour one out for an entire line of characters who worked for me, who died. And I know this because It was Guts, who is one of your starters. No, Behemoth is one of your starters, right?
Yeah.
Who I expect as like a brawler, basically. High health, great mobility, got in, brawled it up. And I think she might have been in a Hunchback for a while. And then a character named Guts inherited her mech. And she was also this like big fuck off lady who was just like, I'm going to get in your fucking face and beat the shit out of you. And then she died because that's a very risky place to be. And then someone named Undertaker took over that Hunchback. And like again and again and again, I was putting these like badass women who were super tough, who had high piloting and high whatever the brawling, the juggernaut skill is. What is that skill chain called?
Oh, now they've removed Juggernaut.
The one that Bulwark is in. Whatever the one Bulwark is in. Whichever it is. I had like three of them. And so by the end, I had lost Behemoth, Guts, and Undertaker all in that same mech. And so I ended up renaming it, and it was called like, you know, I still called it the Hunchback, but it was like the GBU Hunchback, because it was like, all right, Guts, Behemoth, and Undertaker all died in this fucking thing. And eventually this character named Root inherited it, and she ended up being the same voice actress as one of the earlier pilots. and she saw me through the rest of that game. Like she's my brawler now. She has all of the health in the world, and one of my first big purchases with money at the end of the game when I think I got access to the black market via Flashpoint. One of my first purchases was something that gives her 3 extra health points in the mech so that, like, she will not just get taken out by attrition in that same way. Maybe a random headshot will still get her one day, but she's in this long line of characters, and that is so much of that was communicated mechanically. They had similar types of play. I put them in a similar mech, if not even the same specific one sometimes. And that complexity is what produces that and ends up letting mechs be these sort of mythological analogs, right? Or mythical analogs in terms of the human capabilities, in terms of who you are as your personality and how you get through things, you know? And that ended up being one of the coolest things for me. I love bringing story to games via the systems, and BattleTech again and again and again let me do that. So huge props there. Kato.
And I feel like it's even so intrinsic to like the mechanics that it happened. So I played multiplayer a bunch,
right?
Like it still happened in those moments. Like you would still have those moments of like, this is this character doing like going all out because like when you don't have to kind of think about like the money aspect of like the regular campaign. When you're like, when you can like really push mechs like to the edge, like there's a lot more. I felt like I had a lot more stories of like that got riskier because you just want to win no matter what, right? And like, there's, you know, like that all comes through in like how many deaths from above I would do versus what I would do in the regular game. And like, it was just like very, it let me like kind of attach stories or role play those specific units as like in a position where it's like it's do or die,
yeah,
right? Like no matter what, like they have to get out of this mission alive, or not alive but winning for whatever side they're winning, like they're fighting for, right? Uh-huh. And like all of these like kind of last ditch effort, like the death from above, or like the fact that you can really really like the fact that you can overheat a mech if you need or if you want to, all of these things that like hurt you but if they hit can turn the tide of a battle are really great for making those like amazing like, you know, last ditch effort moments that are, you know, really stick with you. Even like that didn't just happen in the campaign through narrative there, but like also in multiplayer matches I felt that like, you know, those like amazing moments.
Totally. I'm glad you spoke to the multiplayer. Rob and I had a really fun multiplayer battle at the end of our 36-hour save point stream. That was fantastic. We should play some more BattleTech multiplayer because that was a blast. Before we go, I'm curious from both of you, what would you like to see from BattleTech in the future? Either from Harebrained as a studio or just from more BattleTech and Mech Warrior and more stuff in this space?
I'm actually super curious about what it, because I come from the Dark Age like lineage, that game had, you had the mechs, uh-huh, but you also had ground troops and the armor, the like little, you know, armored vehicles, yeah, and infantry and all that.
Did it have aerotech? Did it have planes?
Yeah, I think there were some also some, you know, flying Jackson, like units and stuff. Yeah. And so like it was and like I would be interested if there's a if there's a way to incorporate other smaller units into your own lance, you know, and like take control of those and like the ways that those are much more fragile and all that, like I think would be really interesting as like an expansion of the tactics that are already there. The way that ended up working mostly in Dark Age was that there was only ever one mech on your side, right? So it was kind of like the like pushing force, and then you had all this other support. Interesting. Mostly, sometimes you could fit in another smaller mech within the point buy, but like usually that's what would happen,
right?
And I'd be interested in seeing that sort of play as well, even if it's multiple mechs, but like still have like this other small units that can do, you know, different things and like have different, like I don't know, I feel like that would be interesting to see. I'm not necessarily sure if that's a thought in there because it's like very focused on having a lance full of mechs right now.
Rob, how are you?
I mean, that stuff does sound great. Like, I mean, the Battletech novels that I read were often about how did the Battletech fit into a much more complicated, like, military tactical landscape,
right?
Infantry running around, like, prepared fighting positions, air support, drop ships coming in, weapons blazing. Could be really cool. Like, I'd be curious to see if they could implement that stuff. I think mostly the thing I'm eager to see is them begin to unfold sort of the familiar history of Battletech from this starting point. Like, the Fourth Succession War is around the corner, narratively. And the other thing that really interests me here is that Harebrain's spin on a lot of this stuff is, I think, a little more leftist inflected than the original lore necessarily was. For instance, like you see it right there in the it took me a while to really figure out what was going on in the opening cinematic, which I love every time it comes up. The dawn breaking over the horizon. I love it so much. It's my cue that happy mech time's about to begin. Loading is complete, can just get to the mechs. Anyway, because in this video they're unfolding familiar history in the Battletech universe, the fall of the Star League, the killing of the last of the Camerons at the hands of Stefan the Usurper. But all from the standpoint of, was the Star League totalitarian by the end? Like, was it, like, were the Camerons tyrants? Right. I haven't heard that before. That's a different view on this. Because Battletech traditionally was very, the noble prince needs to take power. The noble rulers need to, you are rooting for explicitly in the Fourth Succession War, the novels they wrote about them, you are explicitly rooting for a newly forged empire to just start rolling up on everybody around them. Like, they just become a superpower and their first step is to just like kill millions of people to like knock their enemies on their ass once and for all. And you're like, hell yeah, I hope they do it. Finish them. And what interests me here is that I think in a lot of like subtle ways, this version of Battletech is a little more skeptical of that narrative. It doesn't buy into the Outer Rim is technologically and culturally backwards and is inferior in every respect to the Inner Sphere where the settled great powers are. It doesn't really buy into that. And so I'm very curious what this familiar history will look like as told from the standpoint of a harebrained schemes that seems much more critical of the types of narratives that Battletech has traditionally treated as its stock and trade. Yeah. To that, I'm not eager for the clans to come in because I think they pose gameplay challenges. Yeah. The direction Battletech went in the end was, what if everything just had more hit points and more damage? What if just more of everything? And it made it for a less balanced feeling, more fluky game. I'm very hesitant to see them take on those design challenges just yet. I'm quite happy with the balance of power that exists in this universe, and I'd be curious to see them sort of linger over the Fourth Succession War for, you know, a full release cycle.
I would be just really quickly interested in them making factions feel a little more important in the next one, or like what I want now that we've gotten this campaign that's very focused on like you being on the side of one person is the other side of like like which kind of does happen a little bit in Flashpoint, yep. right? Where this new campaign system where you're just like floating around, but like it's still within this faction system of this game that isn't super. It doesn't feel like the most impactful in your play usually.
So they're doing. Like, there are a couple of things worth calling out that they actually try to step in that direction in Flashpoint, and maybe even just in the base update that hit. Because some of that stuff is just, like, the reputation system is just part of the most recent patch. So they completely overhauled reputation to where you can just straight up be denied missions now because your reputation is too low.
Interesting.
And you gain access to new missions and also to cheaper, it's still a store thing, like cheaper parts. But eventually, with Flashpoint installed, you also get access to Allegiance-only Flashpoints. So, like, if you max out your relationship with the Draconis Combine... Not the Draconis Combine. Any faction, right? If you say like, okay, I'm gonna just max things out with Hal Steiner, like then you'll get missions just from them only for people who have maxed out reputation. So they're starting to go down that path with Flashpoint. Flashpoint in general makes it feel like those other. Like the major houses are actually here in the periphery, or like actually doing some action. Like you're dealing a little bit more with some of the major players. I definitely think you should try that out. But I think you're also right; they can continue to push that going forward.
And like narratively as well, right? Like this idea of like maybe some branching narrative depending on where like you decide to put your allegiance and like that sort of thing would be really interesting.
Building back on Robert, you were saying about the kind of skepticism that this team seems to have about what's come before and hopefully what they'll bring to the table in the fourth succession war. One of the things I love about it, that intro specifically, is it's modeled, I don't know if it's modeled after, but it recalls for me every Civilization intro ever, where it's like, aha, yes. The progress of humanity through history and, you know, in battle, it's like through the stars. Ah, yes, you're escaping the confines of backwards Earth and going out. And then immediately it's like, nah, dog, like everything comes with you.
Yep.
Like you don't get to escape gravity. Yep. And that is such a key part of what that game does. And the way that it understands power, though again, like you do end up being the dog of a noble family. So I am super curious to see how they deal with the succession war, and then also just I think there's a way to do the clan invasion, but I almost never want to be given a clan mech ever. You know, like they've already done it. Like giving you the assault mechs was already such a big deal. And one of the things that I think the most recent patch and the new contracts that they've added from that did was make it so that even assault classes aren't invulnerable. I mean, they weren't before, but the mission types that I've been getting are actually putting me in threat in a way that I was not under threat in the main campaign by the end, and especially even in regular contracts at the end, I was just like mowing over everything. But now even a smaller tier contract puts some of my best pilots at risk in a way that I didn't expect. And I think I want that to be like where the top is. I would love to go against a squadron of clan mechs down the road and just be completely outgunned and just like put me on the fucking back end of that thing. Give me the version of a campaign where I lose, right? Like push me back against the fucking wall and lose and lose and lose again. Make me go deeper and deeper into debt instead of just having that zero. I mean, that's the other thing I would love is a system that's like, right now, if you hit zero, you lose the game. It gives you some warnings that you're getting there, but like there is no function for like, all right, I'm going to do some free missions for someone to get myself out of debt. I'm going to slowly work my way back out, or I'm going to become... For me, every game I want it to end up being Romance of the Three Kingdoms 10, which lets you go from being goddamn near the Emperor of China to being a single soldier who maybe leads one battalion of roaming troops who can assign themselves at a moment's notice to a warlord and fight for some honor in a battle and maybe get an appointment somewhere. So... that sort of breadth of experience from, you know, Merc who has it all to like, I am really scrimping and saving. It's me and my two mechs and that is it. Could be really fun. Yeah. I'm also just excited about the next update, which is Urban Combat, right? Or Urban Warfare, which hopefully will add some city maps. And we got some of those in the... We get, like, some city-type things in the main campaign, but there are not just randomly generated or pool from a pool or a bucket urban maps in the Contracts mode. I want more of those because that is a style of fighting that is really cool in Battletech, and that looks really good even in MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries, which Rob and I watched a live demonstration of a couple of weeks ago at MechCon. We weren't at MechCon, but we were watching it together on Twitch. And like, I forget how cool it is to have mechs walk. I don't forget this. I think about it all the time. Mechs walking down avenues, you know, separated by giant office buildings and skyscrapers and warehouses. And there's such a different vibe about that. So I'm really curious to see how that expansion turns out. In any case, we've already gone long. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Rob, where can people find you?
At Rob Zachney.
Kato, how about you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
You can follow everything Waypoint does at twitter.com/Waypoint, facebook.com/WaypointVice, and right here at waypoint.vice.com. Thank you to Mello, to 2Mello, for letting us use one of his tracks for all of these podcasts. I don't know which track it is yet. We're still working on it. So you can find all of his music at 2mellomakes.bandcamp.com or at mellomakes, M-E-L-L-O, makes on Twitter. Stick around. We will be back tomorrow with another podcast of some sort, probably. And then likewise, I don't know when the release schedule is here, but in any case, I hope you all have a good holiday. And everyone tonight should you know, have a drink on behalf of our fallen comrade, Decker. Yeah. He deserves it.
Rest in peace.
Peace. Rest in peace.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's body care breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.